Welcome. This is Bull Moose for Real Life, episode 15. And we're a little sad because Kenzie couldn't be here tonight, but we have a very special guest, Caitlin. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Good
to be here. And Caitlin is friends with our chaplain, Father Rob, here, and he introduced us to her, and she's been a great mentor to us and just a great resource for us to go to when we ever have questions and just a chat about life. And so we're happy to have her tonight. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, so before we get into it, we're going to review the challenge from last week. And last week, our challenge was to look for ways God is loving you. So Mary Rose, did you have any thoughts on that? How'd your week go?
Pretty good. I went home this weekend. Actually found out that my brother-in-law is coming into the church this Easter Vigil. So that was awesome. So that was definitely a good example of just like a bunch of love in the family. So yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, super exciting.
That's awesome. I found in my week of just kind of being more aware of the little things, or like the little ways God was present, and like just a couple days, these last couple days with just the good weather, and I was able to go outside a lot and go hiking on some of the trails, and so that was really nice, and just saw a lot of like God's beauty and was really grateful for that. So what about you, Caitlin?
You know, I think just reflecting back on some relationships I had with some people in college, and I was on a phone call with some of my girlfriends, and to hear that a lot of them are married, but they are really committed to church every week and going to mass, like that made me really happy. And just to see like the love they have in their marriages, but also for God, and that was cool to see.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool. All right, well, now we'll get into this week's jitzels. Mary Rose, do you want to share yours?
Sure. So my jitzel isn't really my own jitzel, but I was there to witness it happen. So like I said, this weekend I went home, and my oldest sister, Molly, just upgraded to a minivan, which she's not very excited about because she thinks she's not cool anymore, but I think she is. And so she wanted to come show us her cool new minivan, so she pulls it up to our house. And it's, like, a brand new car, like, 11 miles, like, no one has ever had it before. So she parks it. We all go inside, like, we're talking, and her two boys go outside, and they're playing baseball. And one of them throws a baseball a little too hard, a little too far, creates a big old dent right in the top of the car. Brand new car. That was, like... That did not just happen, that kind of moment.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Especially right then, like any time that would happen, like that's not a good time, but right when just she's getting the
hours,
car.
Hours after they bought this car. So that was, that was an interesting situation.
How did your sister handle it? Is she okay?
She was, you know, frustrated, which natural response, but handled it gracefully.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
That would be quite the jitzel.
Yes.
Caitlin, did you have any?
Well, last week was April Fool's Day, so I, you know, did some harmless pranks at work. And when I was least expecting it the next day, a coworker pulled a nice prank on me. I have like a schedule book for all my appointments, and I thought I had just misplaced it in a different file folder that I had just recently gone through, and she took it and moved it across my office and placed it on a shelf. It was very visible, but I never thought to go look there. And I joke, it's kind of like my lifeline at work. So she got me. She got me good.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah.
A precious thing to you. I mean, that's something.
I know. The little things.
Yeah.
That kind of messed with like my whole routine though for that day. Like if I didn't know where that thing was and like I'm used to looking at that for the day, I would just feel like I would be all off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like leaving your phone at home, if you guys have ever done that, where you just feel like something's missing.
Yes. And you're like, keep looking where for it, but you're it? Like, it's not here. Like, why am I looking for it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, my jitzel just happened, actually, like a couple hours ago. So I was in my bacteriology lab, and we have those Bunsen burners, like, with the flame. And so I was using it, and I was done using it, though, so I turned the flame off. But then shortly after I turned the flame off, I was reaching to grab something on the other side of the table, and I, like, didn't register that, like, the burner would still be hot even though the flame wasn't on. And so I was, like, reaching my hand over, and my arm, like, hit the burner, but I didn't register right away that I should move my arm, like, that's what was burning me. And so it kind of, like, stayed there for a second, then I was like, oh, I'm burning my arm, and then I moved it, but it kind of stung for, like, a few minutes, and I was like, this is not what I needed today, but it's fine.
Nothing good comes out of bacteriology lab.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm experiencing these last couple weeks. I'll be glad when it's over, but
me too,
it's fine. So that was my jitzel. Mary Rose, should you take away Fun and Fresh?
Oh, for sure. Okay, so first on Fun and Fresh is the Father McGivney Retreat. So that's actually happening tomorrow in Belleville. And a few of us FRLs are going to help out, and as Sister Carolyn put it, be these girls' big sisters. So the girls that are attending are in high school, and I don't really know too much about, like, what's going to go on, but yeah. I know we're going to do kind of like a panel.
Yeah.
Of how we're kind of living at, like, authentic, faith-filled friendships in high school.
Yeah.
And I'm just really excited, because I know how much I would have appreciated to have, like, Catholic college girls come talk to me if I was in high school.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, like, coming from, like, high school. At my high school, we did a lot of retreats. And it's kind of weird being, like, somebody going in to help, because I was always, like, the people at the retreat, like, attending the retreat. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because I'm usually on the other end of it. So.
Same. No, I think this will be, like, one of the few times I've done this.
Yeah.
The big sister.
I love that she reached out to you guys, and it worked.
Yeah, so fun. Yeah, we just so happen to have, I have, like, a huge chunk in the middle of my day where I literally have no classes or anything. Same. So. Yeah.
And remind me, is this going to be with only girls, or boys going to be there, too?
She made it sound like it was only girls but I could not be wrong.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think... Did she say junior girls, maybe? Maybe not.
Very cool.
Maybe that's wrong.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm excited.
But yeah.
That'll be really fun.
They may or may not, just fun fact, be coming off of an AC or an SAT. So you guys could be very, you know.
Okay.
De-stress.
Yeah. Inspirational for
them. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be good. That'll be interesting.
Oh, yeah. Lou, don't miss the SAT.
Oh, no.
Don't miss that at all.
No. Yeah, I had a lot of stress over the ACT. So I never took the SAT. Took the ACT, but...
I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, since it's a private school, they may not be mandated to offer it. But in the public school, we're mandated to offer it. And I know it's a stressful time. So,
it is.
I mean, having a retreat could be very relaxing and nice.
Perfect timing.
For sure. All right. And then next on the list is this Thursday for our Newman night. We're kind of doing a... cafe open mic night. I think it'll be super cute. We're supposed to have, like, little cafe tables and coffee and, like, little desserts and stuff, string lights. So that'll just give the opportunity for people in Newman to kind of go up, show their talents, sing poetry.
What are you guys gonna be doing?
Yeah, Mary Rose, are you doing something?
I don't know. It might be a spur of the moment thing.
I think you should definitely do something.
I don't know what I would do.
I feel like you have many talents.
Strange talents.
No, good talents. You could definitely, I feel like, do some dancing.
Oh.
Like some nice, like, I feel like good, like, interpretive dance.
Interpretive dancing, yeah.
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 Jonah could play the bongos.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to have Jonah play the bongos for me, because I'm going to, so the girl said I should say a couple, so I've written, like, several poems, and so they said I should pick a few and, like, read them, so I think I'm going to have Jonah play the bongos, like, in the background, but I don't know how it'll go, we'll see.
It'll go great, because all the poems she's written are insanely beautiful.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the one you wrote for Father Rob's birthday was very touching.
It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Very beautiful.
Thank you. So nice.
So, yeah.
But, yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Should go well.
We'll probably have a story for next week. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then last on Fun and Fresh is good old classic Steak and Shake. So, last night, it was about 10:30, and the girls and I were hanging out after Mass, And Maggie goes, I'm really hungry. And then Kenzie and I were like, same.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, what's open? Where could we go?
The Muck is closed.
Muck is closed.
There's nowhere to get food.
It's a Sunday, and we're doing the WOW program, so Sunday is kind of a relaxed day of discipline. So we're like, we can have ice cream. We can kind of indulge. So we decided to go to Steak and Shake, and we got milkshakes and, like, fries, just classic Steak and Shake.
It was really good.
And just had the best talk.
Yeah.
It was really good. We were there for a long time.
Yeah, we didn't end up leaving until, I think, 12:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you guys talking about?
We talked about a lot of things.
Like,
a lot of, like, high school things, kind of, like, what we went through in high school, because, like, none of us knew each other in high school. So, just kind of, like, comparing stories and experiences we had in high school. And then we got into a really cool conversation that I'd had with Amanda a few days ago. Amanda was on the podcast. But about how to love well and kind of how sometimes we as people love more as trying to possess people or like possess a love for ourselves instead of viewing it as a gift and like God-given gift. And so that was just a really cool concept because it's not something I ever really thought about before, but I feel like I've done that in ways that like I don't even realize. So she was saying if you possess and like if you want something for yourself or like you want to hold on to like a relationship so tight, then normally when you do that, you end up being kind of destructive in your love and end up hurting them rather than if you view it as a God-given gift and something that's not yours to like hold on to, then you can usually love them well and like better and more authentically. So it's really cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. A very fruitful conversation for the middle of Steak and Shake.
Yeah, for late at night on a Sunday. Yeah. It was good.
So that was awesome. So 10 out of 10 recommend Steak and Shake for good food and good conversations.
Yeah, it was good. So is that all we have for Fun and Fresh?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So now we're going to get into it. Okay, I keep hitting this with my hat.
Me too.
A problem. Okay, so just like a little, can we do like a little background of like an intro to you, like where you grew up, where like you went to college, how you met Father Rob, and like how all that happened?
Sure. So I grew up in Elmhurst, Illinois, which is a western suburb of Chicago. I have a twin sister and a brother, and we went to the public schools. Go public school.
Me too.
Fun fact though, really we didn't go to the Catholic school across the street because when my sister and I were getting ready to go into kindergarten, they only had room for one of us.
Oh,
so my parents didn't want to separate us. They thought that would be very traumatizing.
Yeah.
And like who do you decide goes, you
know? Exactly. It would have been traumatizing for many reasons.
Yeah.
We had to pick. So we went across the street to the public school, and it was an amazing journey. We then both went to the University of Illinois, and I stayed there for my master's degree and then moved to the O'Fallon area for an internship. I work in a high school as a social worker, so like a therapist or counselor in the school setting, with a really good friend of mine from college who was getting her master's degree in school psychology at SIUE. She was an RA at Newman and just became a really awesome friend. We were in each other's weddings, and that was really fun to finally be able to live together. And then, how do I know Father Rob? So, well, let me go back to, so then after grad school, I decided to stay in this area because I was dating my now husband, and thought that the St. Louis area was a really nice place. His career was here. I was starting to establish a career here, and I've been at O'Fallon High School for the last 5 years.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Father Rob, let's see. Fun fact, his fraternity was like two doors down from my sorority, but I don't know him from the fraternity or Greek life.
That would be awesome if you did. That would be. You'd have so many stories.
I actually know his brother through U of I and the Newman Center and some friends. His wife now was a sorority sister of mine.
Nice.
And I was going to Rome to visit my sister who was studying abroad for a semester there. And we ran into a group of people at the airport at our gate. And Father Rob was one of those people, and he was going on a pilgrimage. And I met him and told him I knew his brother, kind of just connected on that. And then we went our separate ways. And I hadn't seen him until he came to St. Boniface this past summer.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So... that's kind of how that connects. Another fun fact about, and we'll probably get into it later with some of your questions, but Father Rob's brother married a girl named Julie, who was in my sorority, like I said, and she was a year older than me, but she was very intentional about inviting me into a Bible study, into an organization on campus called Greek InterVarsity, and it was basically like a non-denominational youth group for people that were in the Greek system, so fraternity and sorority life. And we would go every week to this event or group or gathering, and it kind of led one thing to the other where I started going more and more, and then I eventually shifted over into focus, but she was kind of the reason why I went in the first place.
Wow. So that's really cool how that all connects.
I know. I was thinking about that today, and I was like, it's a small world.
Yeah. So crazy. Yeah.
God works in really, really neat ways.
Yeah, yes. Crazy. That's awesome. That's really cool. All right, Mary Rose, you want to take it away?
Yeah. Okay, so first question is, how and when did your faith become important to you?
It's a good question. So I was raised in a house where we prayed before every meal, right? I remember as a little girl, my parents would come in and pray with us before we went to bed. We were always in church on Sundays. Even we played a lot of sports, and even if we had a game, we were in our uniform, but we were in the pew every Sunday before we were allowed to go to a soccer game or a volleyball tournament. And so it was always important to me, but it didn't really take on a new meaning, or I didn't realize how important it was until I went to college. Because when you go to college, as you girls know, your parents aren't there to tell you, all right, it's time to wake up and go to mass, or kind of model that behavior anymore. So it's really up to you if you go. And I didn't go to mass the first couple weeks of college. And my excuse was because I didn't know where it was, which is probably a really bad excuse, but it's the truth. Like, at the time, I honestly had no idea where it was, but I knew that there had to be a Catholic church somewhere. And so, and I knew that my grandparents had met at the Newman Center. So I just knew I had to find this Newman Center. And I started going to the 9 p.m. Mass, and it was a candlelight service. The music was amazing. And the priest there was Father Anthony, and he was the first priest I had encountered that connected with me on a really personal level and was able to connect, you know, the readings in the gospel to life, and it made sense. And so he was the reason I kept coming back to Mass. He and some of the other priests at the Newman Center at St. John's. They were all phenomenal. And so, to make like a long story kind of short, I started going to Mass, and then I kept going to the Greek varsity meetings, and started going to a couple conferences with Greek IV, and it just wasn't, it was missing something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, it was non-denominational, right? Mm-hmm. So it was awesome, but it just didn't feel full or complete, yeah. You know? And so I was introduced to one of the missionaries at U of I, but I didn't really pursue a relationship or, like, a conversation with her until one day when I had a bad experience at Greek IV. They asked me to do a talk about, like, where I was in my journey, and I was talking about how my brother was really struggling with his confirmation, and just a lot of things basically, like, came back to the Catholic faith, and they basically told me, you can talk about, like, all of that, but just don't talk about being Catholic, because, like, the Catholics aren't really well received in a group that was really the leadership council at the time. And I remember getting this email, and I was sitting in a coffee shop preparing to, like, talk that night, and I was like, I have to hide my faith, like, that, yeah. That just didn't sit right. And so I emailed them back, and I told them I wouldn't be speaking, and I went to Newman, and I was talking to the missionary, Amanda, and that's how I started to get more involved with Focus, and went on a couple retreats, got involved in a Bible study, and it kind of took off from there. I also had an experience my junior year, and I think that was when I, like, became fully alive in my faith, where I was assaulted on campus, and, like, that was probably, like, the lowest point in my life, and I knew I needed to rely on God. There was nothing else that was working, and so prayer and going to church and daily Mass was really my lifeline. And so to see His love for us just as we are, for who we are, was really eye-opening and an experience that I had never encountered prior to college. And so I think once I felt His love for the first time in a really impactful way, that's when I was all in.
Yeah.
So
that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So I feel like sometimes, like, when, like, traumatic things happen, people have the tendency to, like, get mad at God or, like, turn away, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that's really cool that was, like, your lifeline. Like, that was what, like, got you through.
Right. Yeah. And you girls went to the Focus conference this past.
Yes.
Seek. Sorry.
Yes.
It's called Seek now. But I don't know about you, but when I went to the first one and I met a really great group of U of I girls, I went on that retreat and knew nobody. And so the fact that I met this group of girls was, like, very cool but nerve-wracking in the same way, because I was a complete outcast. I knew they were Newman girls. Like, I knew that they were friends with each other. But they were just very accepting and welcoming, and I referenced one of them earlier. We were in each other's weddings. Like, that was where I met her and our friendship kind of just began. But where I'm going with this is confession. That was shortly after the assault, I went on this conference and I went to confession, and that was just a very beautiful experience. I remember going back to my hotel room and just being in tears, because the priest was so loving and so accepting and non-judgmental, and right, like, I knew I hadn't done anything wrong given the situation that happened to me, but it's really easy to believe that mm-hmm. you've done something wrong, like, you were in the wrong place, you shouldn't have, you know, And so to feel the love from, like, the father was really, really, really cool and powerful and breathtaking. And I remember I was crying and I was texting my parents. And so the other thing that struck me was there were thousands of other people in line to go to confession. Thousands. Yeah. And it was a Saturday night when probably a lot of the people I knew on campus were out at the bars, right? Yeah. But there were thousands of people, Catholics, Catholic college students that were in line for confession. And to see all those priests there, I don't know, that was something I'll never forget.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when we were there going through that confession line.
Oh, my gosh.
Just the amount of people.
It was amazing.
And just seeing, like, all the priests lined up and all the people that are going to confession, which is so inspiring and, like, kind of give you hope that, like, yeah, okay, like, you're not alone in this. Because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times, like, in college, it's not, like, the popular thing, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, like, just to see that it's so important to so many other people.
Yeah.
It was really...
And they weren't afraid to be right. outwardly Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to confession and I'm not scared yeah. to say it.
Yeah.
Right. And, too, I felt for the first time that when I went to confession, there was no need to be afraid. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a very cleansing, like I said, non-judgmental, welcoming experience. And I think growing up, I was always afraid to go to confession
because oh,
yeah. mm-hmm. I was kind of afraid of the priest,
yeah.
you know? Or I just was like, oh, my gosh, what do I say?
Yeah.
And so I always just associated confession as being scary. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that I realized this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I need to do this way more often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm always so amazed after confession because, like, beforehand I still get, like, nervous, like, what am I going to say? Like, I don't know. But then, like, afterwards I'm like, okay, like, I need to keep doing this. You know, like, it yeah. always keeps me coming back because, like, I always get nervous, like, right beforehand. But I'm like, right. okay, no, like, you remember, like, it was good last time. So, like, yeah. I just keep going. But it is kind of like you can get in your own head, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me, at the SEEK conference, after confession, I came back, and it was adoration, like, when I left to go to confession.
Which is beautiful.
Oh, that was insanely yes. beautiful. Yes. To see 17,000 college students just, like, in complete silence. That was amazing. But once I came out of confession, everyone was, like, dancing and singing, and it was just, I felt like it was a perfect representation of how you feel.
Yeah.
Once you come out of confession, just, like, so
I
happy
love how
and
you
free.
Said that. That's so true.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was great because just happy. And just going to, you already feel happy, and then going to dance with your friends just makes you even more happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, like, a good moment of, like, pure goodness and joy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You definitely feel God's presence and love there.
Oh, my goodness.
So
much.
So much.
Yes.
I'm so happy you guys went to that.
Yeah. Yes. So good. So good. So our next question, kind of like you, I think you were touching on it, but, like, what inspired you to want to bring Focus Greek to your sorority, and what was that experience like?
Sure. So Focus Greek was thrown out there a while ago by one of the missionaries on campus named Amanda, probably some other people too, where they realized that getting into the fraternity and sorority houses was kind of a challenge. And they wanted to, as Focus missionaries, and so they wanted to find a way to get into the sorority and fraternity houses in a way that wasn't viewed as, like, weird or, I don't know what the stigma was. But so my husband and I were both in leadership positions in our sorority and fraternity, respectively. And I would talk to some of my friends about a Bible study. Julie actually always invited me to a Bible study and tried getting some going in the house. And then I tried getting some going within my pledge class. Some of my good friends that I knew went to Catholic schools, right? Like, I knew they were Catholic. They'd go to church sometimes. But it never stuck. And so we actually didn't bring Focus Greek into my sorority. Mm. we found that that was true for a lot of the other sororities on campus as well. So we started with representatives from a variety of sororities and fraternities, and we came together to form Focus Greek that way. And so okay. Amanda and John were both missionaries on campus, and they worked with us and kind of helped get that started. And so we had like a speaker series where, you know, John Landecker came in from Colorado and he spoke in the basement of like a sorority house, and we had fraternity members there, sorority members there. We had a panel with like one of the priests, and kids could just ask questions at one of the fraternity houses and or challenge the priest, whatever. Like, it didn't you didn't have to be Catholic to attend this event. The priest would come over and just like smoke cigars with the guys in the fraternity house. I think they really enjoyed that. Yeah. Like, the guys thought it was cool. So we just try to bring it to the level of like where the kids in the Greek system were. And the first year it kind of rolled out was our senior year. So I'd be curious to see, go back on campus and see where things are at. I know they then, you know, it may have been our junior year. No, it was our senior year. And then they ended up having missionaries come in that were specifically for the Greek houses. But I'm just curious where they're at now. I know it's continued to grow and thrive across the country. And so I hope and pray that, you know, that's something that happened at U of I. I should probably follow up on that. That would be a really cool thing to see where it's at and if there are Bible studies going in the houses and stuff like that.
That's really cool that you were, like, the first group, though, to do that and were part of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a neat experience.
The response, like, good? Like, was it good turnout, or, like, was it what you thought it would be? Was it hard? Was it hard to get people to go? Or?
It was people that were already in Mass every week, right? So a lot of people that we didn't have to go too far to recruit. We would make announcements at Mass, or we were at the quad day. So, like, it was easy for them to maybe join. I don't want to say easy for them, but they were already in church. The hardest part was getting people that weren't in Mass every week. And that came from really having personal conversations with people in our houses or in other houses and inviting them to come check it out. And sometimes we would just meet up at the bar and talk. You know, you have to meet a lot of these people and continue to meet people just in general where they're at. And so it was hard in the sense of trying to figure out ways to recruit people to come and then come back to Mass, right? Like, that's still something that is a struggle to this day, is getting young people in the doors of church. So getting them to come to the events. But we probably had 40, 50 people by the end of senior year that were showing up to things. So
it's a cool size group.
Yeah. Better than, you know, 10.
Yeah.
You know, because 10 would have been representative of the people that were already coming from the different houses that were kind of like the core group of people that helped.
That's a good number then.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. And I liked how you said you would go and meet people where they were at, like, already. So they were in, like, their comfortable zone.
Right.
And
right.
You weren't, like, pushing it on them. Yeah.
That's huge. And not judging.
Yeah.
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 And just...
Go ahead.
Just, like, offering that invitation.
Right.
Like, you're not, like, forcing anything or whatever. You're just offering it, you know?
Correct. Yeah. And so you could go out to the bar and have a drink with them and talk for... Let's say you're out for 2 hours getting a drink, and maybe you only talk for 5 minutes about what Focus Greek or Focus was all about, and then invite them to an event or invite them to Mass. If that's where they were at and that's all they were willing or comfortable to talk about at that period of time, that's where we would meet them.
Yeah.
You know? To be clear, we weren't focus missionaries or focus Greek missionaries in any way. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to help get it off the ground and right. started.
That's awesome.
It is. Yeah. Alrighty. So, next question is what made you want to be a counselor?
So, when I was in high school, I struggled with anxiety. Specifically, like, school-related anxiety. And I met my school social worker after I had done an anxiety kind of, like, treatment program in my junior year. And so as I was coming back into the school full-time, she introduced herself to me and really was an amazing resource in the building to help me when I was feeling really anxious or stressed. And we got to be very, very close over the course of a year and a half. And I didn't know that there were social workers in the building. A lot of people don't. You know, my husband didn't even know that they had a school social worker in their high school. A lot of public schools, I should say, have them. Private schools, not necessarily. Some do, though. And I realized that that was a career or a job that I may be called to. I went to U of I and started studying psychology because they didn't have an undergraduate social work program. And then one day I was walking home my sophomore year to my sorority house, and I passed by the school social work, and I went in. And I was just called to go in for whatever reason. And I met with the director of the undergraduate program, and they had literally just reinstated the program for undergrads. We talked for about an hour. I was sold. She, to this day, is someone that I look up to and that I text often. She's a mentor in the field. And I applied, found out I got accepted, and literally got out of my cognitive psychology class while the guy was lecturing and switched my major. Wow. And I knew I wanted to work with people and make an attempt to make a difference in the lives of students in high school, like my social worker did with me. And so that's kind of what led me to this path.
Awesome.
That's really cool that, like, you have the experience firsthand, too, of experiencing that, because I feel like that makes, like, what you do more meaningful, and, like, you have more of, like, a personal connection to it. So you can, like, it makes, it's better for the students, I feel like, because you have that personal experience with it that I feel like not all people have in the field.
Yeah. Because I feel like a lot of counselors don't always know, I don't know, they're not in the shoes of the students that are, they're being helping, or they're helping. So that's awesome that you did have that experience.
Thanks. I'm thankful for the people that I've met over the course of my life that have led me to this, you know, because calling your parents and telling them that you want to be a social worker can be nerve-wracking. You know, one of the first things my dad said was, I want you to be happy and love what you do. The second thing he said is, they don't get paid very much money. And I didn't care, you know, like, I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I would make it work. Yeah. And so that's, you know, the mindset I've had ever since.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you said, was that your sophomore year, you said, or your freshman year?
So that was
that you changed.
Going into my junior year, of junior and senior year, I was in this undergraduate social work program.
Gotcha.
And so we were the first class to graduate with, like, 50 kids. And now my professor told me they have, like, 400 kids
graduating. Wow. That's crazy.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
It's awesome, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I geek out to that.
That's awesome.
I love that.
This kind of, like, leads into the next question, but how does faith play a role in your job, and, like, what are the challenges that come with that? Because you're at a public high school, right?
Yes.
So I feel like it'd be kind of hard sometimes. I feel like they would kind of, like, butt heads sometimes. So, like, what's that experience been like?
So over the course of the 5 years, 6 years, there's been times where I've been tested, right? Like there's been some students that have found out that they're pregnant, they're considering an abortion, or, you know, I've had kids that I know are just very sexually active and not respecting their bodies. And so you can't really, again, you have to meet them where they're at. You can't be judgmental. Mm. And you certainly, certainly ethically cannot. Well, it's interesting. Ethically, as far as the social work hat, but then ethically and morally as far as being a Catholic, right? Those are two yeah. separate hats.
Right.
But you can't force religion on anybody, right? So, like, I feel comfortable enough where I'm not the type of person that would say, oh, Sally wants an abortion, and I'm Catholic, and I'm against abortion, so I won't work with her anymore. Like, that, to me, is not something that I could do. Even if she told me that she had the abortion, like, I still wouldn't walk away from her. Most Catholics wouldn't, right?
Right.
But it can be hard not to want to, like, pray with them or talk about all their options, right? I take that back. I always talk about all the options out there. And, you know, and honestly, if you know, they're talking about that and I'm giving them all the options as far as adoption and keeping the baby and all the different routes they could take and they still are talking that way, I also throw out the public health department as a resource because I personally don't like Planned Parenthood, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, that could be a way that I kind of, like, sneak in a resource that at the end of the day, the outcome may be the same, but personally, I feel more comfortable, you know, steering away from mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood. And so, like, that's been, like, an ethical dilemma at times. You know, we have some kids that come from a lot of trauma, and whether it's physical or sexual, and, like, a lot of suffering, and that can be really hard to manage and to juggle. I find myself praying a lot mm-hmm. and reading up on suffering and pain, like, why God is allowing someone to be hurt that bad, you know?
Yeah.
Or why that person's hurting so badly. So, anyways, there can be a lot of things that come up that I have to kind of take a step back and check myself and not project my beliefs on them. But I would say I learned that very quickly, mm-hmm. and so I don't find myself struggling with it a whole lot. Now, it's awesome when I'm working with a student that's Catholic, right? Because mm-hmm. then if they start talking about that, well, that's an open door.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now I can just go right in. And honestly, some of the most powerful sessions or the most healing sessions have been once that door has been opened. And truthfully, even if they're not Catholic, but I know that they're going to church and they're really involved in their youth group, taking that angle, it's just a different path to kind of acceptance and recovery. So yeah. I don't know if that answers it. It's hard. Yeah. There's constantly things that come up, but we kind of just work through them as they are and
yeah.
meet them where they're at. Like, that's mm-hmm. the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Meet them where they're at.
That's huge, I feel like. Because even, like, that's what Jesus did, is he met people where they were at.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mary Rose, do you have the next one?
I do. Okay, so how did you meet your husband, and how have you kind of, like, grown in your faith through your marriage?
We met at the U of I We had a lot of mutual friends. So he was in the business school, and a lot of my roommates in school were in the business school as well. So they were in the professional business organization together, and I knew about him, but he was kind of out in the distance. And then he actually started dating my twin sister's, like, best friend and sorority sister. And so that's when he got a little bit, you know, closer on my radar. But by no means was I like, oh my God, I'm going to date him, because he was dating my sister's friend. We met in October of our junior year at a philanthropy event at my sister's sorority. And then we were kind of just, we didn't really talk much after that. It wasn't until March, right before I was leaving to go to Rome, that I found him wearing an inner tube and swim trunks in a bar off campus.
Interesting.
And he was like the sober brother, and I was the sober sister, which is like something you have to do in part of Greek life.
Yeah.
And so I was just really counting down the time until I could get in my car and leave to go back to Chicago and get on the plane and go to Rome. And he came up to me and he asked for my phone number and asked if we could go to Mass together sometime. And so then we just started going to Mass together. We bumped into him on unofficial St. Patrick's Day in March, which is a huge like drinking holiday on campus. I was leaving to go to a Focus Greek conference. He was doing, he was the president of, like, Interfraternity Council, so he was just making sure people were behaving themselves. But we literally ran into each other outside of St. John's Catholic Church, like, right outside the Newman Center on campus. And so after that, we just continued to stay in touch and go to Mass together and talk at Newman, and started. I feel like we're constantly evolving as far as our, you know, like our faith and what that looks like in marriage. Marriage is hard. The more of my girlfriends that have gotten married, the more phone calls we have right after marriage about like, dang, this is hard, right? Yeah. You have to give yourself away and like your time and your space and your love, right? Your attention. And so, you know, trying to navigate marriage while keeping faith at the center of it all has been exciting, has been confusing, has been rewarding. Mm-hmm. So I like to read a lot of articles, and Tim likes to read a lot of books. And we talk about the articles that I read or the books that he's read, and a lot of them are usually, you know, Catholic authors. Sometimes we'll pray together, which we used to do a lot when we were dating. We're trying to get back into doing that because that's really powerful, or praying the rosary, but really being intentional about going to Mass together as much as possible. And I don't know, that's something we work on all the time, and just trying to make sure that we're there for each other, but we're also keeping God grounded, or like in the center of our relationship and yeah. grounded.
And it's probably like something that always changes, because you're constantly in different stages, you know, mm-hmm. of life, so right. you gotta adjust. So I feel like you can't just keep doing the same thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think just being present with one another, finding time to ask questions and to talk and to have, like, vulnerable conversations too, right? And ask questions, although they may be, like, silly questions about the faith or even about, like, things that go on at Mass. And, like, I'll sometimes ask a question, like, why does that happen when it happens? And Tim's already read the book on it, right? And he can explain it to me, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And then we'll talk about it some more.
Yeah.
So, just open dialogue. But I would like to get back into the routine of praying together. That was super powerful in college. and while we were dating.
Yeah. I feel like it would be, because there's just, like, I feel like a different level of, like, vulnerability, too, with that.
Right.
And, like, you...
That's exactly the word.
Yeah.
It's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
But beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, like, showing how you said when he asked you out, like, hey, want to go to Mass right. together? Like, right off the bat, starting off your relationship with faith as, like, the center.
Yeah.
It's like, you can only just set yourself up for success with that.
He'll joke, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but he'll joke that if the priest was keeping track of how many girls he invited to Mass with him, the priest probably thought he was, like, the biggest player on campus. Right? Because he would always invite people, like, whether it was a group project or, like, in his business fraternity or something, like, all of my roommates went to Mass with Tim at some point.
That was Tim's thing.
That was his thing, you know, and we laugh about it and we joke about it, but it's the truth, like, that was his thing. So it's like an honor to finally be asked.
Aww.
Finally, no, I'm joking.
I was waiting for you to ask.
But it's true, we went to Mass together a lot in college, and working through Focus Greek and getting that up and running was another way that we continue to grow in our faith. So
yeah, that's awesome. That I love the story. Awesome. Love hearing how people meet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so our last question is, how do you live out your Catholic faith while still being a modern woman in today's world? Because you're, like, so, like, hip, modern, just, like, so cool, but, like, you're so faithful too, and I feel like that's something that can be hard to have, like, as an example. And so how do you, like, do, like, both?
Well, thank you. I have a long way to go when it comes to that. So, oh, boy. I mean, I don't even know if I can really answer that, because I feel like I constantly need to reflect on ways that I could bring myself into a closer relationship with God, and sometimes I think I'm doing a good job, and other times I'm like, I could be doing more. I mean, the obvious is going to Mass on Sundays, right? But it's so much more than that. So praying, I pray a lot, and especially with my line of work, and we got talked about that earlier, but I pray a lot, and praying used to be something that was scary for me, but now it's therapeutic and beautiful. And so praying a lot. I don't know if you guys follow Blessed Is She on Instagram.
Yes.
But I read the devotionals a lot.
Oh, okay.
Daily. And so, like, that I guess could be what Maggie was, you know, the hip, you know, like, that could, that's not what I would consider hip in my, I mean, like, I'm not hip because I do that, but a hip person told me about the Instagram account, and so I checked it out, and it's an easy thing to read and to reflect on every day. And so typically